Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We are up to Book 6, Chapter 8. Again, Pierre was overtaken by the depression he so dreaded. For 3 days after the delivery of his speech at the lodge, he lay on a sofa at home receiving no one and going nowhere. It was just then that he received a letter from his wife, who implored him to see her, telling him how grieved she was about him and how she wished to devote her whole life to him. At the end of the letter, she informed him that in a few days she would return to Petersburg from abroad. Following this letter, one of the Masonic brothers whom Pierre respected less than the others forced his way in to see him, and turning the conversation upon Pierre's matrimonial affairs, by way of fraternal advice, expressed the opinion that his severity to his wife was wrong, and that he was neglecting one of the first rules of Freemasonry by not forgiving the penitent. At the same time, his mother-in-law, Prince Vasily's wife, sent him imploring him to come, if only for a few minutes, to discuss a most important matter. Pierre saw that there was a conspiracy against him and that they wanted to reunite him with his wife, and in the mood he then was, this was not even unpleasant to him. Nothing mattered to him. Nothing in life seemed to him of much importance, and under the influence of the depression that possessed him, he valued neither his liberty nor his resolution to punish his wife. No one is right and no one is to blame, so she too is not to blame, he thought. If he did not at once give his consent to a reunion with his wife, it was only because in his state of depression he did not feel able to take any step. Had his wife come to him, he would not have turned her away. Compared to what preoccupied him, was it not a matter of indifference whether he lived with his wife or not? Without replying either to his wife or his mother-in-law, Pierre, late one night, prepared for a journey and started for Moscow to see Joseph Alexeyevich. This is what he noted in his diary. Moscow, 17th November. I have just returned from my benefactor and hasten to write down what I have experienced. Joseph Alexeyevich is living poorly and has for 3 years been suffering from a painful disease of the bladder. No one has ever heard him utter a groan or a word of complaint from morning till late at night, except when he eats his plain food. He is working at science. He receives me graciously and made me sit down on the bed on which he lay. I made the sign of the knights of the East and of Jerusalem, and he responded in the same manner, asking me with a mild smile what I had learned and gained in the Prussian and Scottish lodges. I told him everything as best I could, and told him what I had proposed to our Petersburg lodge, of the bad reception I had encountered, and of my rupture with the brothers. Joseph Alexeyevich, having remained silent and thoughtful for a good while, told me his view of the matter, which at once lit up for me my whole past and the future path I should follow. He surprised me by asking whether I remembered the threefold aim of the order: 1, the preservation and study of the mystery; 2, the purification and reformation of oneself for its reception; and 3, the improvement of the human race by striving for such purification. Which is the principal aim of these three? Certainly self-reformation and self-purification. Only to this aim can we always strive independently of circumstances, but at the same time just this aim demands the greatest efforts of us, and so, led astray by pride, losing sight of this aim, we occupy ourselves either with the mystery, which in our impurity we are unworthy to receive, or seek the reformation of the human race while ourselves setting an example of baseness and profligacy. Illuminism is not a pure doctrine just because it is attracted by social activity and puffed up by pride. On this ground, Joseph Alexeyevich condemned my speech and my whole activity, and in the depth of my soul I agree with him. Talking of my family affairs, he said to me, "The chief duty of a true Mason, as I have told you, lies in perfecting himself. We often think that by removing all the difficulties of our life we shall more quickly reach our aim, but on the contrary, my dear sir, it is only in the midst of worldly cares that we can attain our three chief aims: 1, self-knowledge, for man can only know himself by comparison; 2, self-perfecting, which can only be attained by conflict; and 3, the attainment of the chief virtue, love of death. Only the vicissitudes of life can show us its vanity and develop our innate love of death or of rebirth to a new life. These words are all the more remarkable because in spite of his great physical sufferings, Joseph Alexievich is never weary of life, though he loves death, for which in spite of the purity and loftiness of the inner man, he does not yet feel himself sufficiently prepared. My benefactor then explained to me fully the meaning of the great square of creation and pointed out to me that the numbers 3 and 7 are the basis of everything. He advised me not to avoid intercourse with the Petersburg brothers, but to take up only second-grade posts in the lodge, to try, while diverting the brothers from pride, to turn them towards the true path of self-knowledge and self-perfecting. Besides this, he advised me, for myself personally above all, to keep a watch over myself, and to that end he gave me a notebook, the one I am now writing in, and which I will in future note down all my actions. Petersburg, 23rd of November. I am again living with my wife. My mother-in-law came to me in tears and said that Helena was here and that she implored me to hear her, that she was innocent and unhappy at my desertion, and much more. I knew that if I once let myself see her, I should not have strength to go on refusing what she wanted. In my perplexity, I did not know whose aid and advice to seek. Had my benefactor been here, he would have told me what to do. I went to my room and reread Joseph Alexievich's letters and recalled my conversations with him, and deduced from it all that I ought not to refuse a suppliant and ought to reach a helping hand to everyone, especially to one so closely bound to me, and that I must bear my cross. But if I forgive her for the sake of doing right, then let union with her have only a spiritual aim. That is what I decided and what I wrote to Joseph Alexievich. I told my wife that I begged her to forget the past, to forgive me whatever wrong I may have done her, and that I had nothing to forgive. It gave me joy to tell her this. She need not know how hard it was for me to see her again. I have settled on the upper floor of this big house, and am experiencing a happy feeling of regeneration. All right, there we go, another chapter down. We got another Pierre heavy chapter there. Chattelvelster said, Pierre still wants to punish his wife for what happened between her and Dolokhov. Helena, however, said that nothing happened between them. Do you think he eventually will be able to accept that nothing happened between them, or will we figure out that there actually did happen something between them? JMama8779 said, I'm curious what others think about this question. I'm not sure myself if she did anything wrong, but I'm really on the fence. While I'm not sure if she's actually in love with him, I'm betting she doesn't enjoy the social stigma of having her husband leave her. I tend to think that she did it just because of the way that Dolokhov was sort of rubbing it in Pierre's face at the dinner. And the fact that Dolokhov agreed to the duel sort of seems to indicate a bit of guilt there. Chattelvelster said, as well, Pierre is trying to make some big steps in improving himself. Do you think he'll be able to keep on improving himself? And do you think this will have some benefits for him in social events? He doesn't seem to be making as much of an effort to improve himself as Andre does, although he does refer to literature and his mentors when he's not sure what to do. So that's pretty admirable. That's a good trait. He doesn't follow his impulse when someone comes along and says, your wife wants to see you. He retreats and reads and figures out what he should do in that situation. De Fleury said, I've never been convinced that Helena is dumb enough to play with Dolokhov. Cards or extramarital affairs. She doesn't seem the reckless type. I suspect she was a bit surprised that Pierre, bumbling fool, hadn't gone away entirely, been eaten by a bear or shot by somebody else that didn't like his face. Perhaps now he has the invisible support of the Freemasons, he's more valuable socially. Kind of feel like we don't know enough about Helena. She's not one of those characters where we've sort of gone deep into them and known them in and out sort of thing. I heard that, how that sounded exactly just as I was saying it. But I don't know. I don't trust her. That's my gut instinct about Helena. It was something to do with the way that Pierre proposed. It was all very shady. The way he kind of was tricked into it almost. Or not tricked, but almost like peer pressured down the road of proposing. And she went with that, and that kind of makes me think she's a bit self-serving. Well, I don't love seeing Pierre in this depression. I hope he picks himself back up. I guess we'll have to wait and see. That's going to do us for today. Thanks very much for listening, and I'll see you tomorrow.